even as we laughed, a dark shadow hung over us in the 40s and early 50s. The shadow was polio, and human suffering was acute as thousands were stricken with a horrible disease and hundreds died. During the months of August and September in those dread polio years, beaches were empty. Moving pictures were shown in near empty houses. WCCO Radio, the good neighbor to the Northwest, conducted a series of contests, and you, the listeners, to WCCO, raised nearly $600,000 for the fight against polio. The mayor of Minneapolis then, now senator and candidate for vice president of the United States, Hubert H. Humphrey, recalls the dread polio years.
We had a very, very bad polio epidemic. We set up an emergency polio committee with the doctors in charge of General Hospital, Dr. Hennekins and Dr. Pohl, I believe it was. And with Sister Kenny, they really went to work. She again proved herself.
The sounds of radio have changed slowly, almost imperceptibly over the years. Today's young people will not remember, but their parents will. Listen to the sounds of the late 1930s, the ruthless sounds of a dictator bent on plunging the whole world into war. It was a chilling sound. Britain and France went to war to save Poland when Adolf Hitler's legions crunched into the tiny, ill-prepared country. Panzer divisions, the Stukas, rolled back the British and the French to a disastrous evacuation of Dunkirk. And then, December 7th, 1941.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
The next day, a grim, determined President Roosevelt went before the Congress and asked for a declaration of war against all the Axis powers.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
Overnight it happened. The railroad stations and air terminals were clogged with servicemen. At home there was meat and butter rationing, sugar hard to get, gasoline in short supply. Everything was for the war effort. On WCCO Radio News broadcasts, you heard the story of the war, the failures and the heartbreaks at first, and then, gradually, the successes. The entire nation was heartened when this announcement came on June 6th, 1944.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe, made in conjunction with our great Russian allies.
D-Day, the road back to victory. In one of the most remarkable wartime broadcasts ever recorded, correspondent George Hicks told the story of the largest armada of ships and the largest army of men ever assembled in the history of the world.
Our own ship has just gave its warning whistles, and now the flak is coming up in the sky. Looks like we're going to have a night tonight.
Get it there, boy! Another one coming over.
And then, at last, victory and the announcement of the Japanese surrender by President Harry S. Truman.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans.
On board the battleship Missouri, General Douglas MacArthur presided over the surrender ceremony by the Japanese.
Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always. These proceedings are closed.
The war was over. It was all finished. Our boys would be coming home. And this is the victory scene on Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, as reported that September day in 1945 by WCCO.
On this, the day that the war with Japan ended. Ever since a few minutes after President Truman announced that the war had ended, this has been one madhouse. It's been a combination of the Aquitennial Parade, the 4th of July, and perhaps New Year's Day as well. It's been a combination of everything. We're going to try to give you a few things.
Some of you will never forget the voices you heard on WCCO during the years of World War II. There was Ed Veman, Paul Wan, Frank Butler, Bill Stewart, Bill Wigginton, John Raleigh, and Bob DeHaven, who played the part of Friendly Fred on a soothing, relaxing nighttime music program.
Well, good evening, everybody. Are you home tonight? Or are you over to Aunt Minnie's to see her quilting for the county fair? Are you holding your girl's hand? Well, if not, hold it. I have easy music such as Here Comes Heaven Again and Basin Street Blues by Fats Waller and Somebody's Rock and My Dreamboat. I won't tell you every tune because I'm sneaky that way. Billy Butterfield and Margaret Whiting have indicated their opening tune will be There Goes That Song Again. If I fade and stop talking, you'll hear it clean through.
And there was another voice heard on WCCO for the first time during World War II. The farm voice of WCCO, Larry Haig, the station's first farm director.
Good morning, everybody. Well, this morning on the Farm Service Review, we'll be visiting with Henry Zavarol, the Extension Livestock Specialist at University Farm, and we'll be talking about farm safety as it relates to the handling of livestock.
It was in 1952 that Larry Haig was named manager of WCCO Radio when the station's ownership was changed. After 20 years of ownership and operation by the Columbia Broadcasting System, WCCO became locally owned, the radio division of Midwest Radio Television Incorporated. Today's young marrieds, those with small children living in neat suburban homes, they never knew the Great Depression. But their parents remember. They remember, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? The dark clouds of topsoil that blew in from the plains, making twilight at midday. They remember crops that burned under searing heat. The unemployed who clogged the cities, desperately seeking work, any work. Into this situation stepped a new president, Franklin D. Roosevelt. And he tried to bring hope where there was little hope.
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. A line that will echo throughout history. There were evidences of social change, of a new order. The General Drivers Union went on strike and after a bloody battle in the market area of Minneapolis, managed to gain recognition from employers. There was another voice in that era, the voice of Governor Floyd B. Olson, the first farmer labor governor of Minnesota.
It is not the jurisdiction of the courts that I challenge here, but its use of that jurisdiction and its abuse of that jurisdiction that I here challenge.
That was the actual voice of Governor Floyd B. Olson, as recorded in February 1936. He was preparing to run for United States Senator, an objective never fulfilled because he died of cancer on August 22nd, 1936. Some called Olson a reformer, and there were others, too, demanding changes and a better deal for Northwest farmers. All this, these evidences of social change, were all heard on WCCO Radio. But radio grew rapidly during the Depression 30s. Radio provided instant communication and inexpensive entertainment. And the names you heard on WCCO, Cedric Adams was just beginning what would be a successful career as a newscaster. And a popular personality was Cleland Card and his Morning Almanac.
But really, to tell him you'll have to pound my windowsill.
Cocked her shining eye and says, what did you do with the light? Socket?
And there were other names you heard in the 30s. Eddie Gallagher, Al Chance, Ed Abbott, Al Harding, Max Carl, and George Grimm. One of the popular WCCO radio shows was the Pure Oil Potpourri with Jack Malrick's orchestra.
Swing with the string. Swing to the music of Jack Malrick and the Hormel Orchestra. The voice of Gertrude Donahue.
You're an old man, an old party.
Heydrich and his romantic violin.
The cares and the worries of the Depression 30s vanished, at least for a while, just and listening to radio. There was Little Orphan Annie and Jack Armstrong and Major Bowes and the Lone Ranger.
Fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver, the Lone Ranger. Before this exciting adventure, a word from our sponsor.
There were dramatic shows and skits by the hundreds, and one of them that had its origin at WCCO was Tina and Tim, a story of the problems that Mrs. Hutchinson had with her Swedish maid Tina and Irish handyman Tim.
No, 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 no. Sweet Mr. Lee, at last her wife has found you. Ooh,
that's a pretty little ditty.
Oh, dropping from the eaves again, Buster. How many times did I have to tell you to rap on the door?
I'm sorry, Tina, but I didn't want
to. Those were the years the WCCO radio grew steadily, expanding its influence throughout the Northwest. From 5,000 watts to 50,000 watts in 1932. From the old Nicollet Hotel studios to newer and larger studios at 625 2nd Avenue South in Minneapolis in 1938. From 810 kilocycles to 830 kilocycles and a new, more powerful antenna in 1939. But in the 1920s, those were the difficult years for radio. Chances are you're older and you're telling your grandchildren about those days. One of the programs you heard was the Wheaties Quartet.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties? For wheat is the best food of man.
The famed story of Wheaties, one of the early success stories in the history of WCCO radio. It was a story of lagging sales and near failure until Washburn Crosby Company, later to become General Mills, asked WCCO radio to do something about Wheaties. Two WCCO radio men, manager Henry Bellows and assistant manager Earl Gammons, wrote the now famous Wheaties jingle, hiring a Minneapolis quartet, which you hear on Minnesota Twins broadcasts to this very day. The 1920s, the era of the Flapper, Stutz Bearcat, and 23 Skidoo. And the music? Here is a sample, Paul Whiteman's orchestra. And another musical favorite, another sound from the past, Whoopi John and his polka band from New Ulm. Back in those early radio days, the late Whoopi John was favored by the German-descended people of Minnesota. But the Scandinavians had their favorite, too, Oscar Danielson and his famous dance orchestra.
Good afternoon, dear Oaken. We open a boat program often med in Chennai, not to Barcelona. Presented by Oscar Danielson, Oaken's orchestra.
Those were the days when WCCO was owned and operated by Washburn Crosby Company, later General Mills, and its studios were in the Nicollet Hotel. One of the popular favorites was Eddie Dunstetter, who performed at the Wurlitzer organ. WCCO's Nicollet Hotel studios were opened with one of the most elaborate programs in the history of radio on the 4th of March, 1925. For 5 hours, the entertainment went on and on. Half a dozen orchestras, singers, trios, choruses.
On that gala day also, WCCO dedicated a new transmitter at Anoka, a 5,000-watt transmitter, and became one of the most powerful stations in the nation at that time. It is now 1922, Labor Day, the first time that old WLAG first went on the air, one of the earliest radio stations in the Twin Cities. It was the era of the crystal set owner, the tinker. The music, by today's standards, it was horrible. No stereo or hi-fi then, but listeners sat by the headsets and tuned in far into the night. Only the old-timers remember the way it sounded. Remember?
Barney Googa, with his googly, googly eyes. Barney Googa had a wife 3 times his size. She sued Barney for divorce. Now he's living with his horse. Barney Googa, with his googly, googly eyes.
But old WLAG, the call of the North, encountered financial difficulties and called no more on July 31st, 1924. The entire radio listening public was up in arms. It was then that Washburn Crosby Company came to the rescue, providing the finances that put WLAG back on the air in September of 1924. And from Washburn Crosby Company came the new name for old WLAG. Using its own corporate initials, the station was renamed. And on the 2nd of October, 1924, the call letters WCCO Radio were heard on the air for the first time.
This is WCCO, the gold medal radio station, now broadcasting from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
This is Dr. Paul Johnson. I was the first announcer heard regularly on WCCO Radio. Of course, that was 40 years ago. And a great many years have slipped by in the meantime. I believe that I was the first announcer to utter the call letters WCCO, the Gold Medal Station, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that night of October 2nd, 1924. From that moment, I realized that radio had changed. It had changed from a thing of insignificance to something of great consequence. And as listeners responded in ever greater numbers to our efforts, I had a feeling that there was more power, more strength behind those words, WCCO.
Philosophical phrases have their place, but in themselves they are not enough. It takes action and purpose, strength and vision to turn the keys which unlock the doors to a better future. WCCO Radio, serving millions across the great Northwest and across the nation, is a part of that future, just as you are. There is work to be done, and for WCCO, this work comes in many shapes and forms. There's news to be reported, so that we might all be better informed, better equipped to join and take an active part in the vision that lies out beyond. And what does lie beyond? One possibility is so vast that it staggers the imagination. With increased public reliance on radio for news and information, the Federal Communications Commission has faced new problems as the airways have become crowded, crowded by signals for 4,900 radio stations. One plan calls for retaining only 12 clear channel stations, including WCCO Radio. The 12 clear channel radio stations would broadcast not at the 50,000 watts maximum now allowed, but at something much greater. And so, as the first 40 closes, WCCO Radio has applied for a license to develop its services at 750,000 watts to serve better than ever our great Northwest and to reach far beyond to areas where radio service is now limited. So please accept our invitation. Join us, WCCO Radio, and let's find out what's happening in the years ahead. But let's not forget the past either, for the past holds our traditions and history safely and surely. From the days of 25, when the sound of Oscar Danielson tweaked the cat's whisker. To the present, when instead of a march, it may be a countdown.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff. The MA-6 vehicle has lifted off.
We'll learn from those years and surpass them with your help, suggestions, and support. The world has its grim moments at present, from Rangoon to Red China.
There's trouble afoot, but this isn't the closing chapter. There are more chapters to be written in years ahead. And on this, our 40th year in broadcasting, WCCO Radio hopes that it may play a small part in writing those chapters which loom before us. From WCCO 1924 to WCCO 1964, let's make a mental toast toward the next 40.